This is part 5 of the Science of Innovation Success series. We'll discuss impact of environment, charts versus words, and how many sales attempts. Let's go! The Driving Eureka podcast with Doug Hall and Trip Babbitt is sponsored by the Eureka Ranch. The ranch specializes in helping companies find, filter, and fast-track big ideas. All right, this is episode 38 on our Science of Innovation Success series. And this week, our three topics are impact of environment, charts versus words, and how many sales attempts. And I've noticing a trend here, Doug, as we've gotten deeper into the series, the more cryptic are your three categories.
So, I'm getting better at hiding them. Just having some fun with it.
All right. So impact of environment.
Okay. So research finds that customers are three times more likely to purchase when they like the environment. So the environment, whether it's in your store, whether it's the environment of being with you, hanging out, whatever it might be. University of British Columbia students were shown advertisements for products. In one case, they were played music that appealed to them, you know, while they were looking at the ads. In another case, they found annoying music, and the professors have to do studies, and they'll play different music, so they'll ask them how much they like it or how annoying it is. And I'm not throwing people under the bus here, but Indian classical music was found to be the most annoying music that they could play.
Well, they're in British Columbia, except in India.
So they're not getting it. You know? So after they did the viewing, they were then asked if they'd be likely to buy a small thing like a pen or, you know, they'll have a couple of different things. And three times more bought when they were in the environment where they liked the music than not. So as Ben Franklin said, if you would be loved, love and be lovable. When you're making your pitch, make the environment friendly and as likable as possible. Well, you know, I mean, we just have to, you know, and I've seen this in a number of different studies, Trip. I've seen this in a number of different places where likability, you know, does somebody plain like this? You know, the product's wonderful, it's nice, but I just don't like them. Likability is a big thing. And, you know, when you get into all of this power and intimidation and all that kind of stuff, I'm not sure. Not sure.
Have you done any studies? There's a book, Bob Cialdini or Robert Cialdini, Persuasion. And I think one of the things that he covers often there is smells. Because smell is, it's kind of funny. Your eyes, when you see something, it kind of fills in the blanks. It's kind of scary, actually, because there's multiple parts of your brain that go into sight. But smell goes right to your – basically, it goes right to your brain. There's a spot that it goes. Okay. And so there's people – there have been these studies like lavender, supposedly, is something that makes people – have you run across any of that?
I've not gotten into that kind of stuff.
Okay. Because you've been dealing mostly – and not exclusively, but mostly with product.
Services.
Okay. Yeah,
we'll do both. And there are some scents and there are some things on that, but there is some literature on some of this stuff, but it's just not been an area that I've looked at.
Okay, cool. All right. And the second thing is charts versus words.
So when presenting data to a customer, you will be most effective if A, you provide a clear and simple chart, or B, you explain the data in clear and simple words. What do you think?
I would think a scene. I'm very visual. So I would say the simple chart.
The correct answer is B.
And I should have known that.
You explain the data in clear and simple words. Yes, we've talked about this before.
Okay.
And research comparing the use of a chart with numbers and percents versus simple words. The words were proven two times more effective when communicating the market's message, and words were three times more effective at increasing purchase intent. So, I mean, because see, the thing is with the words, the picture, they've got to interpret it. They've got to turn it into a thought. And if you want to get word of mouth, if you want them to tell someone else about it, they got to have some words to do it. Mm-hmm. And so if you can just in simple terms describe what it is that's going to happen, You're going to have more effectiveness. Now, are they going to like it as much? No, they're not going to like it because it's easier. Just let's just look at the pretty picture. I don't have to do anything. And it's just like mind candy going by. You know, I want them to think. I want them to engage. I want them to do it. Whether it's emotional thinking, rational thinking, I don't care. But I want to touch them. You can write me poetry. You can write me facts. I don't care. But I want to connect deeply. And if you're going to connect with them and you want to get them, you're going to have to be able to articulate what it is.
Okay. All right. So you're really in the woods. So let me ask you this, Doug. Would a graph with words, is that even stronger than just words by themselves?
Well, sometimes we have to share data.
Okay.
And so what I teach my folks is there will be no chart without a footer that explains it. That explains learning. We will not present a chart without a caption. And the caption captures the essence of what the thing is about.
Okay. All right.
Well, that makes sense. So we'll do that when we're sharing data. But so many times people will just, you know, leave the images and it doesn't do it. And part of it is because they don't know what to say. So they're not clear on it. And that gets them in trouble.
So it helps provide the clarity that you're looking for too from your previous message about, you know, being simple and as far as the message goes and being able to write to that, I think you said 11th grade, or is it 11th grade or 11-year-old?
11-year-old.
11-year-old.
Yeah, okay. Like the fifth or sixth grade.
Okay. Yeah. All right.
That's what you're trying to do. So, but you got to get it to words.
All right.
And Tripp, I think that's part of the challenge that we face is that our, you know, like with innovation engineering, we have a communicate course and it's really about communicating, not spelling, grammar, dotting I's and crossing T's. And that gets missed sometimes. It's not that you don't need the writing fundamentals, you do, but what we really need to get, the thing that's missing is the thinking. You know, so that we've got clarity in our thinking.
You know, it's interesting, and what one of many things that are interesting about you, Doug. But whenever I've met an engineer, and I know quite a few that went to Purdue, you know, because I'm from Indiana, but they always were people that did not either enjoy English or were very good at it. So, is this something that you learned on your own, or did you just kind of always have this, or did you find out early that, hey, it heightened your awareness that this is the way you have to communicate, therefore I got to become a better writer? How did you, what was kind of your...
Well, what happened to me was I chemical engineer, I worked for the Procter & Gamble in the Mehoopany plant, and then I went to brand management, and I had a boss named Barb Thomas, who had a master's of fine arts in writing.
Yes. Oh, no.
I took engineering because of the least amount of writing classes. And, you know, hey, it was a thing, you know. I do the math. And I'll never forget, a week or two after I started, she called me in and she says, you're a really horrible writer. And I was like, yeah, well, yeah. I know that. You hired me. And I'm seeing my life pass before my eyes. I'm going to be going to Nalco Chemical in Chicago and I'm going to become a chemical salesperson, I guess, or something. I think that was my plan B. And she says, so I want you to stop writing. And I was like, yes, baby, I'm good. She says, no. I meant, and then she did, you know, the air quotes, writing. She says, you're never going to write, but she says, you're a very good thinker. I want you to think onto the page. And changed my direction in my life. And now I'm on seventh, working on my eighth book of all things.
So how did that change? What was in
that? Because I just stopped trying to write.
Ah.
I just told my story.
Ah.
I spoke with simple words. And I just told it. That's why I love Hemingway, you know, simple. And my books, people say, it sounds like you're talking to me. Duh. Yeah. Because I don't know how to write the great American novel. And it's simple, clear communication. And so engineering is a powerful way, and it's very common. After they go through an innovation engineering course, it is very common that the engineers will write concepts that score better than the marketing people. And my best hypothesis on it is, it isn't that they're necessarily smarter, although they'll debate they've got higher IQs, blah, blah, blah. They took a real degree, not the, you know, which I'm not going to buy that because I graduated at 2 point something. So I'm not in that key school. But I think what it is that the product, the technical people understand the product. So they make the product the hero of it, or the service the hero of it. They know how the IT system works. They know how the system works. Where many times the marketing people end up using puffery because they don't have a deep knowledge of the science of what it is the organization's doing. So it's easier to take an engineer and get them to write things that appeal to a consumer by teaching them the rules than it is to take a marketing person and teach them physics and chemistry.
Interesting. Okay. No, that I was just curious. Like I said, there were people that I knew that went into engineering, and they couldn't even spell their own name. I mean, it was something they weren't interested in. Interesting story. Okay, so the third area that we're talking about, how many sales attempts? What do you mean?
So when attempting to make a sale, research finds that the best return on your investment of time and money is to make 3 attempts. To make 3 attempts. And again, we're talking about something new. Okay. The first pitch you make should ignite what the research says is curiosity. You're not trying to really close the sale. You're trying to get curiosity to get them to think. You want to try to get them to stop and think about here's their problem and here's a possible solution. Now, the more weird the solution is, as in the more different it is, it's going to be harder for them to grasp. So our second pitch is going to be about understanding. So curiosity the first time and understanding the second. We're trying to get them to really understand how this thing works and how the promise made in the first pitch can be really realized. And then on the third pitch, that's when we're going for a decision. They've got enough information. We're going to take care of their key concerns. And that's where we're going to ask for the sale. But the challenge is many people make 1 pitch or 2 pitches and give up. You know, don't do this. Make 3 pitches to ignite the curiosity, develop the understanding, and get to a decision, which is what you're looking for, a positive decision.
So can you kind of play this out a little bit? Let's just take the whiskey stuff, you know, that you're working on, how this would apply to that particular setting if you were trying to get, I don't know, you're working with Windsor and Eaton and, you know, a number of different places.
Well, if I was talking to the consumer,
okay.
My first and foremost focus would be that everybody deserves their own whiskey.
Okay.
And I would say that now for the first time, you can literally become a whiskey maker and you can make your own bourbon. And we're going to make you the whiskey maker. And the ways we're able to do this is because 70% of the flavor comes from the wood. And what we've done is we've developed a collection of bourbons with really different woods, from European sherry oak to American oak to 200 year to maple cherry and to smoked, 3-wood smoked. And you're able to blend these together just like the whiskey maker takes barrels from different parts of the rickhouse to make their whiskey. Only in this case, we're going to teach you how to do this, and you're going to make your own personal whiskey.
Okay. And so is that the curiosity piece, or is that?
I'm going to give the whole pitch.
Okay, cool.
I'm going to give the whole pitch. All right. But the first time around, they're going to be, you say, what? Then I'm going to come back down again. And what I'm going to generally do with an understanding is, and sometimes this happens in the same event. You made the basic pitch. Now I'm going to take you through tasting these things, and you're going to get the different tastes. Okay. And then there's the decision, do you want a bottle or a case?
A case or 10 cases? Right. If I go to with one of your previous suggestions, once they decide to buy, sell more.
That's right.
Okay.
Well, that's why I want a case instead of one. Case is 12. So,
okay.
It's an, when you go to 12 instead of one, that's an order of magnitude. You're moving a decimal point. So that that's good. We're okay. Good on that.
Okay. Very good. Any other comments with regards to these three things? And you know, one thing.
No,
I mean,
you want to be. I mean, folks, stop selling. Stop selling. Just tell your story. Tell your story. Simple words. Be likable. And don't give up. Do it three times, not because you're trying to harass them, but because you believe in your heart and soul and how valuable it is what you're doing, that you know it's going to make a difference for people. Funny story. Mm-hmm. And this is going to be a public service announcement.
Oh, no.
So I'm old. Okay. I just turned 60. And as you get 60, you got to do tests, right? And because you got to check things, it's like the click goes off and the doc says, okay, time for the colonoscopy. You know? and so I go in, you know, to get this, you know, this wonderful experience. No, it's a horrific experience because it's like a day of prep to get ready for this thing. And it's just bleh. Okay. The good news is I'm all good. But what's interesting about it is, you know, they're doing the chit chat, you know, the nurses there who are just like, it's a production line as they're running them through one after the other. And I'm just joking and saying different things. And they say, what do you do? I say, well, you know, I do, I've done some books and, you know, I kind of invent for people. And they're like, yeah, whatever. And I said, yeah, and I make whiskey. Oh, you make whiskey? Whiskey? You make whiskey? Yeah, I do. That's really neat. And they go, that's really nice. I mean, can we get you whiskey? I said, well, yeah, you can buy it coming up, but, coming up, you're going to be able to, you know, instead of buying my whiskey, I think everybody deserves their own. You can make your own bourbon. You can do what? Oh, yeah. You can make your own bourbon. Really? What's that website again? They start to write down. Okay, so we get into this. Next thing you know, all the people in the nursing station, they're all talking about this bourbon thing, okay? So then I go in, you do the deal, you come back out, you know, you're in the recovery room, you come back to consciousness and all of this stuff. And the nurses are there. So see, can we really make this bourbon? I go, yeah. In fact, you could have your Christmas party if you want it over there. Oh, really? Really? Would you tell the doc? Sure enough, the doctor comes out to say you're healthy and all the rest of this stuff. And I said, by the way, doc, I got this thing. The staff here is saying, and I know I have to come back in 5 years, so I want to make sure they're happy with me. He says, that's awesome. Here, call my office manager. I'd love to do that. That would be great. So here I sold a Christmas party.
That's funny. But
it's just being friendly, telling the story. I told the story multiple times, you know, in a little different way each time. Nothing fancy, no PowerPoint decks, no anything, just talking about it. Just talking about it. And that's all you got to do. And so stop selling. Some of this selling stuff, it's trickery. And you're just going to get the boomerang effect later. No, just have a simple conversation with people about what you're going to do. And, you know, so this whole series, as we're closing it up now, The Science of Innovation Success, a lot of it is, you know, blazingly obvious, but somehow we've lost the obviousness. We've got too much gimmicks and tricks. If I see one more Facebook lead generation gimmick thing, I'm just going to scream. Just be folks, tell people what you're going to do. Problem, promise, proof, you know, some pretty basic stuff. That's all it takes. Help me. I'll be happy to give you money.
Very cool. Very cool. Very good. Good way to end the series.
And if you want to learn more, one more cheesy plug, want to learn more about the science of innovation success, the innovation engineering system. The innovation engineering system is detailed in the new book, Driving Eureka. Please support independent booksellers and, of course, all online conglomerates.
Very good. Thank you, Doug.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Driving Eureka podcast. This podcast is part of the Innovation Engineering Institute. Innovation engineering is a new field of academic study and leadership science. Its mission is to change the world by enabling innovation by everyone, everywhere, every day, resulting in increased speed and decreased risk. To learn more about on-campus, off-campus, live and online courses, visit innovationengineering.org.